morning. We are coming to you live from General Convention in Salt Lake City, Utah. We are with the Episcopal Herald, an online magazine that strives to imagine, articulate, and analyze the future of the Episcopal Church. My name is Beth McGill, one of the Herald contributors, and I am here this morning with Brian Taylor, who chaired the Task Force on Marriage for the last triennium for the Episcopal Church. So, Brian, thank you so much for being here with
us this morning.
I wanted to have a conversation with Brian because he really has an in-depth understanding of the Episcopal Church's work around marriage. And so I was wondering, Brian, if you would just begin by describing the process of the work that the task force has undergone over the last 3 years, what that was like for you personally or for the task force as a whole.
Sure. Well, 3 years ago at the last General Convention, there was a resolution to form this task force on the study of marriage. And it came out of the group that put together the Blessings Project in the triennium before that. So that was part of the Standing Committee on Liturgy and Music. And as the Blessings Project went forward and was approved, they saw the need that we would need to... The Blessings Project, which I was also a part of for those 3 years, we kept coming up against marriage and saying, well, we've got this theology of blessing that we've developed very carefully, and we've written about it, and we've got this big group of people, and we're looking at how does that theology of blessing get expressed in liturgical form. And we kept coming up with, well, how does this differ from marriage, or does it? And we didn't really come up with a definitive answer, which we published, but one of the things we kept talking about in the course of those 3 years as we met was it became this kind of, you know, code where somebody would say, well, if it looks like a duck, if it walks like a duck, if it talks like a, it's probably a duck. And the blessing, we really saw blessing in marriage together. And so we put forward this resolution that we should now study marriage and see what we would come up with without any preconceptions of what would happen. 12 people were appointed by the presiding bishop and by the president of the House of Deputies. I was asked to chair it, and we worked for the last 3 years. And the primary product of that work was... two resolutions, one of which has gained a lot of attention, which is the resolution to change the canon on marriage so that it would be gender neutral, but also so that it would be updated in terms of being more practical, more in tune with the spirit of the theology that we produced as a group. That's one of the resolutions. The other one is to continue the work of studying marriage and other relationships in the next 3 years. The other part of our work was to produce resources for study and conversation. We put out a thing called Dearly Beloved, a toolkit for conversations around marriage, which has been used in many places, and we hope it will continue to be used in parishes to talk about marriage and people's experience of that and what the Bible says and so forth. But the other resource was 7 essays on marriage, which we produced. There's about 100 pages or so on historical, biblical, theological, vocational questions of marriage, all sorts of things. And one of those is current norms and trends, which we were asked to look at. Current norms and trends, that study showed us how we've only begun to really touch the tip of the iceberg here, not only in terms of what is marriage and what is marriage becoming in today's world, but what are the other things we need to consider in relationship to marriage? There's so many more people living together than there used to be. There's so many people getting married later or not at all. People are coming forward asking for a blessing but not marriage. There are single people who are saying, hey, what about me? Is this a vocation? And if so, how? There are blended families. There are all sorts of different family configurations that are happening, so much so that all these other things are actually challenging in terms of percentages. Marriage as the norm.
Sure.
So we need to study all of this stuff.
I'm just really struck by the depth of the work that you and the committee
have
undertaken over the last 3 years, and just want to say thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
For those who are not present at General Convention or may not understand the minutiae or the polity of what's happening here, you mentioned a canonical change.
Right.
And I know here within the walls of convention, there has been much debate and discussion about the difference between a constitutional amendment and a canonical amendment. In kind of as simple a terms as you can manage, can you kind of explain to us what is at stake and possibly what the difference is?
Mm-hmm. There's a variety of opinions about this, and there's no Supreme Court of the Episcopal Church that's going to decide this, and so people are going to have to live with their different interpretations.
Sure.
And one of those interpretations over the last few months leading up to convention and here at convention is that the prayer book defines the sacramental rites of the church. And therefore, if you produce even a supplemental rite, something like we do with enriching our worship for Eucharist and other things, if you were to produce a supplemental rite for marriage to stand alongside the prayer book liturgy for marriage, and if that supplemental rite were substantially different from what the prayer book teaches as what we believe marriage to be, you really shouldn't be doing that. You should be changing the prayer book. And if you're going to change what we mean by marriage, then change the prayer book, and that takes two general conventions to do. And they say the Constitution of the Episcopal Church requires that. So they're saying it's a constitutional issue because it's changing their prayer book, as the Constitution requires. Others say supplemental rites can be different from what's in the prayer book. We've done that for many, many years, and there's nothing that violates the prayer book by having something that augments what the prayer book does, that isn't covered in the prayer book, that actually wasn't anticipated in 1979 when the prayer book was last edited. And so the church does, in fact, produce supplemental rites that augment what's in the prayer book, and that doesn't violate its teaching. It just provides something beyond what the prayer book does. And so therefore you don't need two conventions to pass supplemental rites. So that's really the constitutional question that's being debated.
Sure. And I was really struck last night at one of the committee hearings for the Special Legislative Committee on Marriage when you rose to spoke about how we're really, and forgive me if I get this wrong, we're really not debating the theology of marriage in the proposed amendments. What we should be having the conversation about is whether or not we develop and include this liturgical sacrament.
Right. When you propose a resolution, as our task force did, to make the canon gender neutral, and as we did also, to say that any marriage that is performed in the church must be done with an authorized rite, whether that's the prayer book or a supplemental rite that's been authorized, all you're saying is you're really opening the door to the possibility that we might have same-sex marriage authorized officially by the church. You're not creating that. And so by itself, the canon change that we're proposing, when it makes it gender neutral, when it says we have to use authorized rites, doesn't change anything. You could say that about the use of the prayer book. It doesn't change that there are heterosexual people getting married with the prayer book. The same canon would apply.
Right.
But it opens the door. And so when, and I believe it will happen, this convention approves some kind of rite for same-sex marriage, it will be covered by the canons if we also pass a canonical change along these lines.
Thank you. What is your sense of the tenor or the emotions around, just from being in the room and having these conversations with folks? Do you have a sense of where we might be headed, or maybe it's easier to ask what your personal hope is for this general convention?
Well, as you know, we just came out of the committee room that is the Special Legislative Committee on Marriage, number 20, that's discussing how to go forward with both liturgies and canonical changes. And in the midst of the conversation this morning, it was announced that the Supreme Court had ruled for same-sex marriage countrywide, and it just stopped everything. And people, many people in the room were very excited and rushed off to call people, and everybody was hugging, and it was an amazing, amazing place to be at this time in our country's history. And I think that, you know, that can't help but influence the tenor of the convention. And so I think my sense of where this is happening, where this is going in terms of this general convention, is that there's a deep desire to move forward and not stall, not kick the can down the road, to do something that makes marriage accessible officially. Because currently, bishops are allowing it in states where it's legal, by a resolution of 3 years ago that says, well, you should provide generous pastoral response in those states where it's legal. And that's a resolution. It's a rubric and a blessing rite that is supplemental. And so there's a deep desire to do something that makes it, that regularizes this. And so I think what will happen is that we will probably change the canons somehow to make them gender neutral. In addition to that, there's a deep desire to have a liturgy that we can use officially for same-sex marriage. Currently, again, there's a blessing rite which can be adapted, even though that's not even spelled out in the rubrics. It says, well, you can change the words of pronouncement. Well, that's very vague. And the Standing Committee on Liturgy and Music has provided several options for same-sex marriage rites, and those have yet to be debated. But there's a deep desire to regularize the liturgy, too. So I think this convention will produce a gender-neutral canon, and it will produce some kind of liturgical rite to embody that canon in same-sex marriage. There's also a deep desire to do this in a way that doesn't stomp all over people who are having a hard time with this change that's happening in our society and our church, but there's a sense of inevitability about it. And our hope is that we can come up with something that will both regularize this reality, move us forward, let our yes be yes to same-sex marriage, and at the same time allow space for people who are struggling with this. And one way of doing that might be to make a liturgy trial use, which is to say, we can start using it, and in 3 years' time, we will review that, and we'll have a lot of dialogue about it as we're doing it. We'll evaluate it, perhaps we'll perfect it, we'll produce more study and conversation about what effect is this having on people, pro and con, and how do we continue to move forward. And that the trial use would, I hope, provide the kind of space that some people feel they need.
Thank you so much, Brian, for your time and your faithful work. This is the next in our conversation series from the Episcopal Herald. Once again, you can find us at episcopalherald.com or on Twitter or Facebook at Episcopal Herald. Particular thanks to Chase Carl, who provides our music for these podcasts, and to each of you for tuning in.